Today's chaplain is Pastor Larry Griffin from Trinity Lutheran Church in Janesville, Minnesota.
Welcome. Thank you. Gracious God, we praise and thank you for creating the heavens and the earth by the power of your word. We honor you today as Lord of Lords. We thank you for the prosperity and the abundance we enjoy in this great nation. Help us, O Lord, in the days ahead to serve you in a humble and careful way, that we might always receive your blessings with gratitude and accept your discipline in a spirit of humility. We pray today for our state senators and all in authority in this great state, their spouses, their families, and the people they represent. Give them wisdom to know the difference between good and evil, and the courage to do what is right and helpful. Help us always to listen to those with whom we disagree, to know when to speak and when to be quiet, when to fight, when to compromise, and how to speak truth in love. We ask for your Spirit to be upon people of all faiths and circumstances in life, that your name would be kept holy in this place and your kingdom would come. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Bless this nation with abundance according to your goodwill, and permit whatever troubles and trials we need to drive us to our knees in humility. May this day in this place be to your glory. We pray in the name of him who loved us so much to suffer and to die on our behalf. Amen.
Please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daley, DeKreif, Dibble, Fishbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Cook, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogemiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Siebenskoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
Quorum is present.
Moving to the second order of business, executive and official communications, there is one printed on the first page of today's Senate agenda. Please make note of. Moving to the fifth order of business, reports of committees, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Moving on to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Bill introductions are printed on today's Senate bill introductions, and there are two to be read. The Secretary will read.
Introduction and first reading of Senate file number 1029, introduced by Ingebrigtsen for the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, a bill for an act relating to state government. First reading.
Senate file 1029 will be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Secretary. Introduction and first reading of Senate file 1030, a bill for an act relating to education, introduced by Olson for the Committee on Education. First reading.
Senate file 1030 will be referred to the Committee on Taxes. First reading of Senate bills. Moving to the ninth order of business under motions and resolutions. Senator Gerlach has a motion.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move that Senate File 926 be withdrawn from the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection. This is my bill. It deals with homeowners associations, and it was sent to the Judiciary Committee. I have spoken to the chairman of that committee, and we've agreed that the best place for this bill to start would be in the Commerce Committee. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I would move that House File number 613 be withdrawn from the Committee on Local Government and Elections and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate File 124, now on the calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch, remaining under motions and resolutions.
Yes, Madam President. Members, I would move that we take up the general orders. Madam President.
I'm sorry.
I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar. And I would, members, I'd like to get to number 14, Senator Rosen bill. Number one, Senator Cruz bill, and number seven, a Senator Rest bill on the general orders.
Senator Koch, we'll take those two motions separately. First, on Senator Koch's motion to go to general orders. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. On Senator Koch's motion to dissolve into the committee of the whole, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. And Senator Koch has designated Senate File 626, number 14 on general orders. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 626 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is basically a two-part bill, and it's dealing with nursing homes. And basically, it's making changes to update the Department of Human Services policy and to improve their nursing home layaway policy and the policy regarding requests for hardship exemptions under the nursing home bed moratorium. Section 1 deals from an issue that happened last September with the floods that hit southern Minnesota. And my little nursing home in New Richland, Minnesota, was completely evacuated because of the floods. And I'm not sure if there's anybody in this body that can remember when an entire nursing home had to be evacuated for up to 3 months. But unfortunately, they had to continue to pay the nursing home surcharge per day per patient or client. And it's unfortunate because there's nothing in law that says due to a disaster or some kind of issue outside of the realm of the nursing home, a natural disaster, they can be exempt from the surcharge per day. So that's number one, in section one, I should say. Sections 2 to 4 is to update the current hardship exemptions that allow a county to apply to the department for exemption from the moratorium on new nursing home beds. The current process right now is broken, and it's been a working group of all the stakeholders, the Department of Health, and the Department of Human Services to work on this to try to get a better policy that could move forward. So basically allows the Commissioner of Health, along with the Commissioner of Human Services, to publish a request for information, and in turn that allows the Commissioner to publish a request for proposals for each designated hardship. And then the commissioner will review and either approve or disapprove. And Madam Chair, I have an amendment at the desk. Hopefully.
Senator Rosen, amendment. I don't believe there is an amendment.
There's no amendment. Sorry.
Senator Rosen, we do not have the amendment or an amendment for in your name.
Madam Chair, what would you like me to do? Just lay this over for right now until I can get the amendment? Progress?
Just, Senator Rosen, just progress the bill, and we will figure out where that amendment is.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Rosen progresses Senate File 626. Next, as a designated general order, Senate File 39, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chairwoman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 39 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chairwoman, members, what we have before us in Senate File 39 today is a repealer bill concerning the Mississippi River critical area. Just to tell you a little bit of history about this critical area, in 1976, the Mississippi River and adjacent corridor designated a state critical area by Governor Wendell Anderson under Executive Order 130. In 1979, that designation was continued and advanced by Governor Albert Cui in Executive Order 7919 and adopted by the Metropolitan Council. In 1988, the Mississippi National River and Recreational Area, MNRA, established by Congress as a unit of the National Park Service, the Mississippi River Critical Area. Then we move forward to 2007 and 2009. Essentially what happened was in 2007 and 2009, a piece of legislation was passed.
Excuse me, Senator Cruz, just a moment. Members, it is getting, the volume in here is rising, and I would just appreciate it if you would speak quiet or take your conversations outside. Senator Cruz is trying to present a bill. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. As I had mentioned, in 1979, a executive order by Governor Albert Cui established the Mississippi Critical Area. Essentially what this is it's a 72-mile stretch along the Mississippi River leading from Hastings up to Ramsey and outlying areas. What the executive order does was it set in place a great set of rules that govern that area. I had an opportunity to actually speak to Governor Cui concerning this executive order in the Mississippi critical area as I was authoring this bill, and I asked him, you know, what was the purpose behind this executive order? Did you see detriment to the river? Were there things that you were concerned about? And his response to me was, no, our goal was forward-thinking. We wanted to make sure that this precious resource was protected and that the rules that were put in place along this corridor were rules established that everybody could live within. So that is the current law today as we see it. In 2009, a piece of legislation was passed requesting that the DNR move forward with rulemaking procedures and establish a new set of rules to govern this 72-mile corridor. There was some concerns about the way this process was handled. There were a lot of folks, be it from residents to the business community to municipalities to even some of the counties in these areas, that had some concern about input and the level of input that they had into this process. So essentially what happened was there was a stalemate here. The rules that were drafted, which were very constrictive rules, were not allowed to be passed in a time frame that was allowable to be signed into law. So what we've done now is we're going to repeal just that 2009 legislation. I want to emphasize this. We want to make sure that we keep in place the legislation that came from Governor Cui's executive order. This is currently the legislation that governs that area, and what a lot of folks feel has done a very, very good job up to this point. Here are some concerns beyond what we have as far as just the input concerns. There are some development concerns down in St. Paul. We have the Ford plant, we have Summit Brewery, and other businesses alike. You'll see that there is a huge concern from the business community down in that area and all the way up north to the North Metro area by the handout that we had passed out today. Letters from Chambers of Commerce, the Port Authorities, multiple organizations. So the concern is there for future development, not just in the residential side of things, but also on the commercial side of things and our business side of things. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind right now as we go through these difficult economic times. We want to make sure that we give our businesses every opportunity to further employment and grow their businesses if at all possible. So that's part of the concern addressed here. Another part of the concern is property values for our residents. A lot of the residents along this corridor, especially up in the northern part of this corridor, will see their property values drastically decreased if these drafted rules are enacted. Essentially, the way these drafted rules are enacted, it's very restrictive in what property owners can do with their properties. In a lot of cases, it extends bluff variances, or it extends bluff areas to twice what they were. It constricts the types of vegetation that these residents can plant on their properties. It restricts visibility. These are all things that our residents along the Mississippi River purchased their properties for and paid good dollars for. Upon resale, if these options are not available, they will see a drastic decrease in their property values. So we want to make sure, especially in these difficult housing times, that we protect those values for our residents as well. Some folks have said that we want to make sure that we're protecting the river. Well, I would argue that who is going to protect the river more than those who live along the river and use the river for business? They understand, especially when you start talking about these residents, that if you talk about shoreline degradation and things like that, this is their property value. They're going to do everything in their power to make sure that they protect that and keep that clean. I had an opportunity to talk to a couple of my residents in that area who've lived along the river for over 40 years, and they said that the river is actually in better shape now than it was back when this executive order was first established. So I think that's a very good thing. I think that's a sign that we have done a great job in protecting the river. Everybody loves this river, so we do want to make sure we do that. I want to say that this bill also saves taxpayers $151,000. We do have a fiscal note on this. I don't think that that's the reason for doing this. Obviously, when we're talking about a budget deficit in billions of dollars, $151,000 isn't going to make much of a dent, but I think every little bit helps, and I think that's a positive side to it. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 39, Senator Pappas.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Is it Madam Chair or Madam President?
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cruz, I'm kind of very concerned about this thing you passed out called Joint Statement on Mississippi River Corridor Critical Area Rulemaking Project. And I'm concerned that this letter does not reflect what your legislation is doing, because I don't get the sense from this that any of these entities, and I represent St. Paul and the river, and I represent a lot of these entities, and except for a few comments that Mark from Summit Brewery made during the hearing, none of these people have talked to me about stopping the rulemaking process. They want to be included. They want to be consulted. They want to be involved, but the city of St. Paul has not said they're opposed to the DNR rulemaking process. I just met with BOMA. They didn't mention it at all. The St. Paul Port Authority hasn't talked to me about it. The St. Paul Chamber hasn't talked to me about it. You know, I don't get the sense that this is such a big issue for them. I think they would like some consistency, some uniformity. Let's complete the rulemaking so that then we see what's out there. Continue to consult with us. They say we look forward to our continued work together. We continue to encourage the DNR to develop standards. You know, I really think that, Senator Cruz, you're misrepresenting the position of at least the organizations that I represent in downtown St. Paul with totally stopping the rulemaking. I mean, we've already invested a lot of money into this rulemaking process. Why not let it complete and then have public comment and have them revise the rules and we can weigh in? There's nothing to say we can't weigh in. But I think this is a very extreme reaction to something that's in process. Some of the comments made in here of concerns that people have were made, you know, months ago, August. You know, are, again, August comments. We don't know what happened in the rulemaking since August and what might happen in the rulemaking if it's allowed to continue. So I think that this is a very unnecessary bill, and I hope that we vote against it.
Senator Cruz.
Madam Chairwoman and Senator Pappas, I hear your concern, and I thank you for your comments. I would say that these are not all old letters. I did not write these letters. These came from the organizations that are represented at the top of that letterhead, some as recently as January of this year. I would also comment that the rulemaking process as it stands right now is stopped. It will take a piece of legislation moving forward to reenact that process. You know, I personally would not be in favor of that just because of the detriment to our residents and to our businesses, but I think if another member of this chamber would want to start a piece of legislation like that, that would be within, you know, their ability to do that. I do also have a concern with some of the resident groups that have rose up over this and created a group that is the Stewards of the Mississippi and have actually gotten an attorney and are considering legislation against the state. I think that we need to take that very seriously. I think if there's that much of a concern, maybe we need to at least look at different ways to do this. One of the things that really surprised me in the testimony through all of our committee process that we did go through and have sufficient testimony on was everybody kept going back to the fact that the current rules weren't being followed. It wasn't apparent to me that we actually needed stricter rules or new rules. The problem was enforcement of the rules that we have in place right now. I'm more than willing to, moving forward, take a look at some of those factors to maybe enforce the rules that are in place right now. But I think if the point is, if we're having a difficult time enforcing the rules that are there, maybe we should take care of that first before we start throwing some more rules on top.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will Senator Cruz yield?
Senator Cruz will yield.
Senator Cruz, I commented already on Section 2, but it's Section 1 that I now would like you to comment on. Section 1 deletes language that we've had in our law, in our statute books. It repeals language that says that we believe we should protect and preserve the Mississippi River for the benefit of the health, safety of the citizens of the state, the region, and the nation. We believe we should prevent and mitigate irreversible damages to these state, regional, and natural resources. It says much more about enhancing the Mississippi River, but Senator Cruz, please tell us, why do you want to do that?
Senator Cruz.
Madam Chairwoman, members, this legislation simply just repeals the 2009 legislation.
Senator Pappas, to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cruz, I don't think that's a good enough answer. I think we need to know when the legislation you're repealing repeals language that says as a state we want to protect the Mississippi River. You mentioned earlier in your comments that we all love the Mississippi River. Therefore, this has nothing to do with the rulemaking language. This is a basic statement of goals for Minnesota that we believe in protecting and preserving the Mississippi River against irreversible damage. Why do you want to repeal that language?
Senator Cruz?
Madam Chairwoman, Senator Pappas, I would say that you are correct in the fact that that is a statement, and I think statute should be reserved for legislation. I think if we're going to make a statement, I think there are other ways to do it. I think there is legislation in place right now when you look at things like shoreline regulations and such that does accomplish that goal. And I think that makes a statement as well. I think that makes a much stronger statement.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cruz, I represent people in Anoka County, too, and I know Anoka County brought this legislation forward. And if you could just kind of keep the Mississippi River in Coon Rapids, be fine. But the people in Fridley and Columbia Heights and other areas along the river have to drink this water. This is our drinking water. And I'm very concerned about local governments setting their own rules on the use of the Mississippi because local governments are very interested in development. They may or may not, particularly those at the start of where this will most affect, Dayton on down to Hastings, will want to do development. They'll want to do all kinds of development, and that's what local governments try to do. That doesn't mean they're going to always consider the fact that a lot of us have to use this Mississippi River for drinking water. There are 39 groups, Madam Chair, there are 39 groups that are against this legislation. Already, the fact of the matter is that $350,000 has been spent on these rules. that it's drinking water for people all along the river, and even the information that Senator Cruz handed out here, I want you to read the first page, because it doesn't say there shouldn't be rules. It's the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. It says that there should be fair rules. It doesn't say that there should not be rules, which is what Senator Cruz's bill does. So far I haven't heard anybody say that there shouldn't be any rules, just there should be fair rules. I already know that the House is not going to hear this bill, so we're hearing this bill and spending this time for nothing. The House author is not going to have this bill heard, and the House chair doesn't want to hear this bill. I'm thankful for that. And Senator Wolf, I think some of the people in our district, a lot of the people, would be against this, knowing that their drinking water may be eventually affected by this, by what you're doing here. While it's true that the Department of Natural Resources did not get this legislation completed, they were well on their way, and $350,000 has already been spent. They are now under a new leadership and a new governor, and I would fully expect that these rules will get completed. I would want them to work with the local communities and work with the businesses along the river and so forth. But I do want the state to be making the rules, not individual local governments, when my drinking water and the drinking water of my constituents is going to be affected. Madam Chair, will Senator Wolf yield?
Will Senator Wolf yield? Senator Wolf will yield. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wolf, you also represent part of Fridley, and you'd represent people along that'll be affected by their drinking water. You also want to make sure that the state doesn't waste money, as we all do. Can you support this bill knowing that the drinking water in your area, as well as mine and others, many others along the river, may be impacted by the state not setting rules for preservation and safety of the water?
Senator Wolf.
Madam Chairwoman, I can support this bill because I believe there are plenty of rules that are already in place that have been established. I think, like has Senator Cruz has said, people who live along the Mississippi River also are going to want to drink that same clean water, and they're going to take the measures. I think cities are taking the measures necessary to prevent that. I think counties, and there are plenty of rules and policies in place that are going to keep that drinking water safe, that I feel comfortable drinking the water in my city.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator
Goodwin.
Wolf.
Senator Goodwin.
I've received a lot of phone calls and emails about this piece of legislation. People in the area are very concerned about what could happen to the drinking water. I think Anoka County is wrong on this issue. I support a lot of the things Anoka County is promoting, but I think they're dead wrong on this issue, and I think maybe been getting some pressure, development pressure and so forth along that river, and they want to make sure that they can get that. I certainly understand that, but I do not understand why they would want local communities to set their own rules on a resource as important as the Mississippi River. Members, please vote against this legislation. And Madam Chair, I would like a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this bill was brought to my committee, Environmental Natural Resources, and vetted quite well, actually. And please understand that local cities and counties and property owners were there, and they testified very, I think, convincingly that the rules and regulations that are in place and have been in place for years to protect and oversee the critical area we're talking about on the Mississippi, and folks, it's amazing how we can stand judgment on local communities here in this body. I can't believe the assault on local communities and local regulations that goes on here, and I didn't hear that in the
in the testimony when Senator Cruz brought this forward. And, you know, the local control thing is just, you know, something that I guess maybe both the two parties differ on. We happen to think that local control and local rules and regulations that are under the shelter and the guidance of the state and federal authorities when it comes to water are fine. All of a sudden, this particular area here is not. And because these dollars were expended in 2009 doesn't necessarily mean that the issues are going to be addressed. As a matter of fact, almost three quarters of those dollars were expended, and the study was not done, wasn't completed. So it was quite clear that I'm not sure exactly why that happened. If it was because they had some resistance there, or the DNR just didn't. Take the time to do it. There was some testimony that it does take time, and I certainly understand it, and I think the whole body understands. When you try and bring that many organizations together, it's certainly like herding cats, I'm sure, but at the bottom line is that they were charged to do that, and it didn't work out, and as Senator Cruz has testified, that we certainly are not going to be letting this local control jeopardize I guess it's now even the drinking water is being talked about. Senator Goodwin made a point that this bill is not being addressed in the House. You know, we're in the Senate here, and we're certainly somewhat different than the House in some regards, and close in some others. However, what we do here in the Senate doesn't necessarily reflect what goes on in the House and vice versa. At least I hope that's going to be the case. If that were not the case, then we wouldn't need a separation of the bodies, and I think we've always moved forward with the idea that when these issues come to the forefront and end up in a conference committee, there's going to be something there to talk about. This particular bill is also covered in our Environmental Natural Resource Bill, and it will be brought to the House and will be discussed there. So this is not necessarily dead in the House by any stretch of the imagination. And I look forward to the conversations with the House member if in fact we end up with a conference committee. So I ask the body to let local control work. It works in many different areas. The heavy-handedness of government is taking a little change here now, folks. I think you're not going to argue with that, and I would stand in support of the bill.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just wanted to respond to both to Senator Ingebrigtsen and some of the other concerns that were raised. I'd like to point out to the members that the updated rules for the critical area will not change local land use control. Local government units will still be the vehicle by which land use, zoning, and discretionary actions will be decided. And the authority of the DNR under the new rules will remain exactly the same as it has been for 30 years. The purpose of the legislation that we passed last year was to provide more uniformity, and so that there could be basic common sense rules that provide a more consistent approach to the rules throughout the corridor. And I don't think we can fail to underestimate the importance of the critical area. Senator Cruz did touch on this, but again, the critical area was designated as part of our national park system in 1988, and the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area is the only national park in the entire 2,300 miles of our nation's largest river. So obviously local control is important, but it's also important to have a review of the rules that were put in place over 30 years ago to make sure that they're meeting the current demands on the river. So I think that throwing away the $350,000 that has already been expended, you know, I'll be the first to admit it's really unfortunate that the Pawlenty administration's DNR didn't finish these rules in a timely manner as prescribed by law. But throwing away that $300,000 and saying we shouldn't move forward is the wrong approach. Instead, we should look for a bipartisan solution to finish the rulemaking, to update the rules, and certainly continue to allow for much citizen input as possible.
Senator Limmer, I had you next on the list. It passed. Then Senator Goodwin. Senator Goodwin, I'm sorry, you were next on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will Senator Cruz respond to a question?
Will Senator Cruz yield? Senator Cruz will yield.
Senator Cruz.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cruz, if your legislation passes, can you name a rule, a protection and statute for the Mississippi River, other than what you would be taking away here?
Senator Cruz.
Could we hear the question one more time?
Senator Cruz would like the question repeated. I guess he didn't quite hear it.
Sure, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Goodwin.
Senator Cruz, can you name a protection in statute currently that protects the Mississippi River, other than the language that you're going to propose deleting here?
Senator Cruz.
Madam Chairwoman, Senator Goodwin, yes, I can. As a matter of fact, I have all of those in front of me right now. A lot of them go back to your local units of government above and beyond the executive order that was put in place. So just to kind of give a little structure behind this, the executive order that Governor Cui put in place established some minimums. Many of these local units of government have gone above and beyond those. There is only two communities that haven't, and so it does rely a lot on those local rules because they are more strict. Just looking here at some of an example of what is in this, what's called an IDR, it's Interim Development Regulations. These are what Governor Cui's executive order put in place. There is a height restriction of up to 48 feet, and that's just the first one on the list, a height restriction of up to 48 feet within a certain setback along the river.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Cruz, one point I want to make about that, though, is that those what you mentioned here are 30-year-old, and I heard mostly executive orders. I was asking you if you could name a protection in statute that for the Mississippi River. Madam Chair, could Senator Cruz yield again, please?
Senator Cruz will yield. Senator Cruz.
I guess, Madam Chairwoman, I'm a little confused by the question. I thought I just did.
Senator Goodwin?
Well, Madam Chair, I'll leave that question alone. The fact of the matter is that what has been done is like Senator, can't remember anything anymore here. Oh, Senator Stevens said, has been done over 30 years ago, and much has changed with industry along the river. And I just want to make the point that it only takes one local community to do things that we know that most of them will trust it, but we also know that that land is very valuable and that it can, that there can be a lot of industry and homeowners and so forth along that river that perhaps don't think of it as other people's drinking water and think of it more as a recreational area or an area where they want their business located that may not be in the best interest of everybody else that has drinking water from it. So it only takes one local community. We need statewide rules on this.
Senator Newman. Pass. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more comment with regards to the last comment with regards to one local community. Members, in Senator Sieben's handout, you'll see a list of folks that are concerned about this and actually are against the bill. However, I can tell you that in my dealings with a lot of them this year, I can tell you with almost certainty that this very same group witnesses one of those communities violating the Mississippi River Corridor. We will hear about it because these people are watching very close, and they do a tremendous job of watching very closely. So, frankly, that group there can be monitoring that, and if one local community gets out of line, I think folks will certainly be hearing about it.
Further discussion on Senate File 39. Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. A roll call has been granted. Secretary will take the roll on the motion to recommend to pass Senate File 39. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 27 nays, the motion does prevail. We will revert back to Senator Rosen's Senate File 626.
Thank you, Senator Madam Rosen. Chair. Even old dog can learn new tricks. I apologize. That was my fault that the A50 amendment was not at the desk. I'd like to move the A50 amendment, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen, you need to renew your motion to recommend to pass.
I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 626 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, now you may move Senate or Amendment A50.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, this is the nursing home bill that is dealing with hardships, especially ones.
I'm sorry, Senator Rosen, you need to move the A50 so the secretary can read it.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move the A50 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves the A50 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate File 626 as follows, page 2, line 18. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Rosen on the A50 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, just a quick summary on this bill. It's about hardships for nursing homes that are required to continue to pay the surcharge even though the beds are empty because of some kind of natural disaster. And also it deals with a process to receive a hardship exemption that both DHS and the Department of Health worked on together with the stakeholders. It's language that has been agreed upon. The 850 amendment deals with just defining and making it more clear who the nursing home language, basically, so and what determines a long-term care or non-institutional facility. And Senator Berglund, I did check this out with the department. This is their language, and basically it really comes down to they want to make sure that people age 65 and older in five-year age groups using data from the most recent census and population projections weighted by each group's most recent nursing home utilization is the method for them to determine that there is going to be this exemption on the surcharge. We were concerned that this was going to cause a fiscal note, Madam Chair, and there is no fiscal note attached to this A50 amendment. And as I said, this is a department and a stakeholders agreed upon language that I would like to amend to Senate File 626. And Madam Chair, I stand for any questions.
Discussion on the A50 amendment. Seeing none on the motion to adopt the A50 amendment, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 626 as amended. Seeing none, Senator Rosen renews her motion to move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 626 be recommended to pass as amended. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. Moving on to number 7 on general orders, Senate File 156, Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 156 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 156 is a bill that will allow canvassing boards following a primary election to meet either on Thursday or Friday. Current law allows them only to meet on Friday, but this would give them the flexibility to meet on Thursday as well. And state primary election, they would have to do so with the agreement of the county auditors.
Discussion on Senate File 156. Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion when this committee do arise. Senate File 156 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I would move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Madam President, remaining under motions and resolutions, I move that we take up the calendar.
Senator Koch has moved we take up the Senate calendar. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 137 its third reading.
Senate File Number 137, a bill for an act relating to real property, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 137. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Number two on the Senate calendar, the secretary will give Senate File Number 191 its third reading.
Senate File Number 191, a bill for an act related to insurance, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 191. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining on Senate calendar, secretary will give Senate File 478 its third reading.
Senate File Number 478, a bill for an act relating to motor vehicles, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 478. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. next on the calendar. Secretary will give Senate File 551 its third reading.
Senate File 551, a bill for an act relating to liquor, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 551. Okay. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 53 ayes and 8 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. We have completed the calendar. We will move on to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Thompson, all day. Senator Jungbauer, all day. Senator Ortman, from 11:45 till the end of session. And Senator Marty, all day. Further announcements of Senate interests, Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Madam President. And I just want to make everybody aware that it is Senator Ingebrigtsen's 36th birthday today. And at least that's what he's telling us. Yeah, I don't know how many times, but he is celebrating today, and there's cake in the retiring room. So let's help Senator Ingebrigtsen celebrate.
Thank you, Senator Gimsey. Further announcements, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President. The Senate Finance Committee will meet in room 107 at 12:30.
Further announcements, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, would Senator Kolk yield for a question?
Senator Kolk will yield. Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Kolk, there's the budget bills are coming out of committee now and going to finance, and I know many of them, I understand, don't have official fiscal notes from the respective, as they're moving out of committee, they don't have official fiscal notes from the departments or from MMB. I'm just wondering, when finance considers them, before they come out of the finance committee, are we going to wait until we actually have official fiscal notes so that we're sure that the bill's spreadsheets are actually accurately reflect the amount of money that's being saved or raised in the bills?
Senator Kolk.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Bach, for your question. With all the committees, of course, we're encouraging committee chairs to be working with the administration and the departments on finding some numbers. In some cases, we've had some third-party outside sources, some very reputable Minnesota companies that have testified to some dollar amounts, but we'll continue to work on those numbers. What I would say is that, you know, our approach this year, as we've always said, is going to be a little different, but we'll continue to work with the administration and the departments. You know, these are there are areas of the bill that you know, I think are important and key, and some good things that we're working on doing. And we'd look to the administration and for help and support in some of these areas.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, I think there is no precedence in the state Senate for passing a budget bill that doesn't have an official fiscal note from MMB, formerly Department of Finance, or from the respective state agencies. And I just would encourage the majority, let's make sure we put a budget together on real numbers. We have a responsibility to balance the budget, and we all take that seriously. The last thing I want to, situation I want to be in is because when some official notes come in after we go home, that we're called back here for a special session because the budget that we balanced didn't have accurate numbers in it, and we have a deficit, and the governor forces us back into a special session. I think we should avoid that. So to the extent I think Senator Roebling can assure that in the Finance Committee we have official fiscal notes so we know that the spreadsheets are accurate, I think it would be helpful to all of us going forward.
Further announcements, Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to ask for a point of personal privilege. Madam President and members, I'd like to ask the members of the State Senate to take a moment to acknowledge the tragic loss of an extraordinary young man from my district. Michael Strzok, 39 years old, was killed on the job this week during a clearing debris from rising floodwaters at a creek culvert that feeds the Minnesota River near St. Peter in Mankato. He was a 9-year employee of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Michael was both an extraordinary small-town Minnesotan and an extraordinary man. He and his wife, Amber, a public health nurse who works with disabled patients, have a 5-year-old daughter and 3-year-old son. He was also a 13-year veteran of the Volunteer Fire Department in the small town of Cleveland, which is home to at least 3 generations of Strzok family members. Michael received an award a year ago for saving the life of a 19-year-old runner who went into cardiac arrest. That man says he owes his life to Strzok. You may remember the small town of Cleveland is also the home of Jack Zimmerman, who recently lost his legs while serving in Afghanistan. When Michael's accident happened, his mother, a MnDOT employee based in Minnesota, heard nearly immediately of the accident. Painfully, it took almost a day for search and rescue teams to find Michael's body. The Strzok family has experienced more loss than a family should have to bear. Earlier this month, Michael's brother Andy lost his battle with cancer. I ask that you keep this special family, the town of Cleveland, and this everyday hero, Michael Strzok, in our prayers and hearts. Madam President, I request a moment of silence.
Please rise for a moment of silence. Thank you, members. Further announcements, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I would then move that this body do adjourn until tomorrow, Friday, March 25th at 9 a.m.
Senator Koch moves we adjourn until Friday, March 25th at 9 a.m. All in favor, say aye. Those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.